Why do we produce the IMC Radio News?
Because the chasm isn't left to right. It's top to bottom.
To give voice to people who aren't heard.
To bust up the myth of objective journalism.
Bill O'Reilly does not have a monopoly on the truth.
To build our community and re-educate the public.
To revive the voice of organized labor.
To bring forth debate so as to animate democracy.
Because I want to agitate for revolution.
Listen to the voices of your community on IMC Radio News. Welcome to the Iurbana IMC Radio News, bringing you independent media authored by citizens in your community and definitely not sponsored by Philip Morris. I'm your host, Michael Feltus. Today we'll be bringing you a report from Springfield. 5,000 workers gathered on 2nd Street in front of the state capitol this past Wednesday to show solidarity with their fellow workers affected by the state budget crisis and to make their voice heard to politicians as a powerful voting bloc in the November general elections. Dan Chambers and I went west to record voices from the leadership and the rank and file of the AFL-CIO unions, so stay tuned. But first, these headlines. This is a headline on Israeli war crimes from the Amnesty International website. On their return from a research mission to Israel and the occupied territories, Amnesty International delegates presented today their preliminary findings during a press conference at the Foreign Press Association. Delegates interviewed eyewitnesses and met government representatives, including from the Israeli Defense Forces. They visited Rumina Village, Jenin City, Jenin City Hospital, and Jenin Refugee Camp. The evidence compiled indicates that serious breaches of international human rights and humanitarian law were committed, including war crimes, but only an independent international commission of inquiry can establish the full facts and scale of these violations, said Javier Zuniga, Director of Regional Strategy of the organization's International Secretariat. The delegation received credible evidence of such serious violations, including failure to give civilians warning or time to evacuate Jenin refugee camp before Apache helicopters launched their first attacks, failure by the Israeli Defense Forces to protect the people of the refugee camp, who are, quote, protected people under the Fourth Geneva Convention relative to the protection of civilians' persons in time of war, allegations of extrajudicial executions, failure for 13 days to allow humanitarian assistance to the people in the camp who were trapped in the rubble of demolished houses or running out of food and water, denial of medical assistance to the wounded in the refugee camp and deliberate targeting of ambulances, excessive use of lethal force and using civilians as a human shield, ill treatment, including beatings and degrading treatment of Palestinian detainees, and extensive damage to property with no apparent military necessity. Again, that was from the Amnesty International website. It's a report on state budget cuts from Brian Hagee. On Monday, April 22nd, over 250 concerned citizens showed up to express their opposition to Governor Ryan's recently proposed budget cuts. The meeting, taking place in the Illinois Terminal, stems from the fact that these budget cuts severely affect the mental and behavioral health fields in Illinois. These fields include services to people with developmental disabilities, mental illness, age-related mental disabilities, and drug abuse problems, to name a few. In Champaign County, a wide range of agencies, such as the Champaign County Nursing Home, Developmental Services Center, Provena Behavioral Health, Prairie Center, PACE, and GROW would be among the agencies having to deal with budget cuts from $200,000 to $800,000. One person at the meeting indicated from her research that the state of Illinois ranks near the top of the list for revenue by state and near the bottom of the list for support for mental health by state. Representatives Rick Winkle and Tom Burns both were present to listen to the concerns. Both insisted that they will, quote, do what they can to prevent the budget cuts from being passed as they are, though they both recognize that this is a, quote, difficult economic time and a, quote, difficult budget to balance. Representative Winkle has shown support for the mental health field in the past by helping to keep the Early Intervention Program, a program that provides assistance to infants with developmental disabilities to encourage development before entering the school system, alive and funded. Finally, we have a headline on House Bill 101 by Doug Fink. A bill that would ban discrimination based on sexual orientation was put back on the shelf Wednesday after its sponsor determined he could not muster the votes to get it out of an Illinois Senate committee. Senator John Cullerton, Democrat of Chicago, said he may try again to pass the bill during the post-election fall veto session. We don't have enough votes. We don't have any Republican votes, Cullerton said. The bill is currently locked up in the Senate Executive Committee, a panel with an 8-5 Republican edge. Moreover, the Republicans on the committee are all loyal to Senate President James Pate Phillip, Republican Wooddale, an opponent of the bill. "We're going to hold off to see if there's not the possibility of passing it in the fall veto session," Cullerton said. House Bill 101 narrowly passed the House a year ago and had been bottled up in the Senate Rules Committee. It adds sexual orientation to the Illinois Human Rights Act, making it illegal to discriminate because of sexual orientation in most transactions involving employment, housing, public accommodations, or credit. The Illinois Human Rights Act already bans these types of discrimination based on race, color, religion, gender, national origin, ancestry, age, or marital status. Again, that headline from Doug Fink. Now we'll turn to a commentary offered by myself, Michael Faltus. It's another installment of our occasional series entitled Just One Thing. Just when you thought big tobacco couldn't get any more slimy, any more obnoxious, any more insidious, somehow it finds a way to surprise you. The surprise for me came in the form of a glamour magazine named CML that I didn't pay attention to when it first came in the mail. A day or two later, as I sat down to eat, I got around to really examining the tabloid. The front page features a tableau of seven glamorous men and women, all representing the, quote, seven pleasures of the exotic, as described on the header. There's a sharp-dressed African-American man with drumsticks and a snare, rhythm. A lovely white woman dressed in a silk robe and kerchief, the spa. There's a vaguely Latino man sitting with a plate of fruit in his hand, representative of feast. And there's a tall black woman in a black pantsuit with a cigarette holder held delicately in her right hand. She's tabac, and it becomes clear before long that tabac is what this waste of a good tree is all about. You see, CML is a publication of the R.J. Reynolds Tobacco Company. My age group of college-age people is perhaps a little higher than the corporate executives are aiming at. They try to hook us when we're in high school, but this seems like an advertisement designed for all young people to reel in those who aspire to the jet set. The magazine includes write-ups of Mardi Gras and the Canary Islands, the hot tourist spots and club scenes of San Diego, the latest fashions for Banana Republic and Hermenegildo Zegna, Cajun recipes from New Orleans, CD reviews of artists such as Nine Inch Nails, Michel Indigocello, the Chemical Brothers, and Busta Rhymes, and descriptions of a spa on the Sinai Peninsula owned by the Four Seasons Hotel franchise. Sprinkled throughout are little reminders of the brand. The markers on the map of San Diego are little dromedaries, for example. And, of course, six full pages of straight-up Camel advertising. It seems that Camel is also sponsoring a, quote, Seven Pleasures of the Exotic Tour, where they go to cities and hold special nights at local bars, while presumably free packs of Camels will be handed out at the door. There's even the old Instant Win game, sponsoring trips for two to New Orleans and free giveaways of cigarettes. Perhaps the part that is most laughably self-serving is the, quote, letters to the editor. Hi, CML. I live in a boring little town in Massachusetts. It's usually the same old, until I receive my CML magazine in the mail. I can't wait to read all the unique articles and feast my eyes upon the great photos. I truly love it. My cigarette of choice is Izmir Stinger, and I even have my neighbors savoring Camel's exotic blends. They have inspired me to have a Camel block party, compete with recipes for food and drink from the magazine. Of course, we'll kick it up a notch with plenty of Camel cigarettes to go around. Ah, so sweet, so complete. Cheryl Cordero, Somerset, Massachusetts. CML replies, great idea! We hope your ingenious party plan is adopted by other readers. To add even more spice to your next bash, you should check out our Elixir feature on page 28 of this issue, which includes exotic cocktail recipes for making your own potent potables. Adult smokers at your future block parties will definitely enjoy sampling our upcoming exotic blends. See future issues of CML for details. Dear CML editor, I'd like to thank all you guys out on the assembly line putting together the cigarettes, especially the ones who tear each tender leaf of Turkish blend so neatly that every time I light up, I get such an even burn it makes me smile. Not to mention the great flavor that makes my taste buds come alive. I collect lighters, and one day I found an old brass number 5 no flint roller metal striker in a flea market. This one had Camel imprinted on it, which made me a true believer in my smokes. If a cigarette has been around longer than the invention of flint, you can't deny their quality. Jacqueline Watson, Saginaw, Texas. Big Tobacco is fighting a losing battle at home, trying to get around the restrictions on television and radio advertising. I'm glad that their reach is slowly receding, and in a way, their resorting to direct mailings like this is a sign that they're fading fast. This mailing was directed at my father, who doesn't need any convincing to keep going, having smoked longer than I've been alive. Their mailing lists are not useful for hooking new users. The new battle is abroad, as the tobacco companies try and establish a base of smokers overseas to supplant their eroding U.S. stronghold. And as the expose in the May 6th issue of The Nation shows, they'll do anything, even embark on massive smuggling campaigns funded with illicit narcotics money. There's a long, hard row to hoe when it comes to big tobacco. But here's one thing I can do. Now that this commentary is finished, CML is going in the recycling. B-I-N.
Everybody smokes in hell. The decor's just like a bad hotel and casino. And everybody swears they're just in Reno instead of eternally damned. But what's the difference? And everyone's in deep denial, especially when the blackjack dealer fakes a smile in their direction. But on further inspection, it's clear they've been thoroughly scammed. And all the stand-up comics joke about the weather. How hot is it? Well, it's so hot that your flight back to Vancouver won't be leaving till this place freezes over. It's the same joke. Oh!
Local songwriter Paul Kottheimer with his song Everybody Smokes in Hell. You're listening to the IMC Radio News on WEFT 90.1 FM Champaign. The feature on the Springfield Labor Rally begins with a sound collage produced by Dan Chambers of speeches delivered at the rally. I want to inform you that the background music is The Have Nots, a song by the country punk band X.
We should all live union, work union, ask our wives, our children, and our neighbors to vote union. We're going to have to fight to make it right. What are we going to have to do? Fight to make it right. Welcome to Springfield, everybody.
I know when I look out there, I see people with strong hearts and strong stomachs because you know what has to be done. And the reason we're here is to remind people on the Hill to watch out for the interests of working men and women, and they haven't been doing it.
You know we have a budget crisis. We know that. We live it every day. There are ways to fix this budget, but it's not on our back. It's on everybody's concern. Corporations are not paying their share. That's no surprise to us, but it's time.
And we have had a $1.5 billion deficit that they have to deal with. The governor thinks they ought to deal with it by putting it on the backs of state workers. And we have a simple answer for that. Hell no, you won't!
On Wednesday, April 24th, 5,000 members of unions affiliated with the Illinois AFL-CIO gathered in Springfield to raise a protest over the direction the state budget has taken. With its emphasis on cutting funds for state services like care for the elderly and mentally disabled, and services for Illinois' poorest residents. They also were gathering in support of increasing the minimum wage, enacting corporate accountability legislation, and in general protection of union jobs. The day was started off by a press conference held inside the legislature, where AFL-CIO President Margaret Blackshear directed pointed attacks at Pate Phillip, the president of the Illinois Senate.
We are trying to send a message in particular to Pate Phillip and his cronies that are refusing to allow our bills to be called. So we will not stop until we convince either a new legislature in the Illinois Senate or Pate Phillip and his cronies about what is important for working families.
Blackshear went on to lambast corporate giveaways doled out to companies coming into the state of Illinois.
It isn't just September 11th. It is indeed the corporate giveaways that have come to corporations in the state of Illinois, whether it's the decoupling issue at the federal level, which is imperative that we decouple in Illinois.
The concept of decoupling needs a little background. As part of the so-called economic stimulus packages passed after the terrorist attacks on New York City, Congress changed the tax code such that for 3 years, corporations could claim a, quote, bonus depreciation deduction on the purchase of new equipment retroactive to September 11th. According to an example from the Joint Committee on Taxation, its effect is thus. On March 1st, 2002, XYZ Corporation acquires and places in service a piece of machinery that costs $1 million. The bonus depreciation provision allows the corporation to claim immediately a special depreciation tax deduction of $300,000. The remaining $700,000 is deducted from taxable income over several years beginning in 2002 under the pre-existing depreciation rules. It is simply a speed-up of the traditional practice, giving corporations their money up front. The rub for the state of Illinois is that the cost of this federal giveaway is automatically shifted to the state budget, since the laws on Illinois state taxation in this area refer to the Internal Revenue Service Code. Thus, when federal law changes, Illinois state law changes without any action on the part of the legislature. However, that change is not mandated by federal law. The state law could be altered to refer to the tax code of, say, September 1st, 2001. Perhaps the worst aspect of the bonus depreciation provision is this. The U.S. Constitution has been interpreted to mean that state tax codes cannot discriminate between in-state purchases and out-of-state purchases for multi-state corporations. So if Firestone upgrades equipment at its tire plant in Aikenville, South Carolina, it can also claim deductions in all the other states where it has plants: Tennessee, Ohio, Oklahoma, Iowa, North Carolina, and Illinois. Bottom line, according to the Center for Budget and Policy Priorities, decoupling from federal tax code on bonus depreciation could save the state of Illinois $806 million over the next three fiscal years. Blackshear continued.
And it isn't just AFSCME. That's what people are trying to paint it as being. It's not. It's all of the public employee unions. It's all of the unions of this state. We all receive services. We all have, in the building trades, there are construction projects that are being put on hold. There are people now that are suffering because of this budget crisis way beyond the state employees.
Blackshear sounded the call to AFL-CIO members for political action in November.
So our work today is to activate the membership, to remind everybody in this building that we worked very hard in the March primary, and we intend to work very hard in the November general election. They have an opportunity, this General Assembly does, particularly Pate Phillip, to open the door and allow hearings. If he refuses to do that, our members are going to remember.
Blackshear went on to talk about the ways that the AFL-CIO would like to see the budget issues fixed.
Well, we have a number of proposals that decoupling is certainly a part of it. The single sales tax factor is another part of it. Increases in cigarette and gaming taxes are all part of the package. And then there are a number of, as has been pointed out by our speakers, there are a number of loopholes that we can shut to come up with dollars.
Steve Ridley, a member of Hotel Employees, Restaurant Employees, Local 16 from Peoria, expressed other concerns about corporate accountability.
Overall, just that with the executive pay going up by 500%, 750% compared to what the workers are getting, that's what we're talking about. These white-collar criminals getting away with the stuff with Enron. I mean, you name it. I mean, the little guys are getting into the crap. We need some better stuff here.
Mike Fitzgerald, business manager from Local 134, IBEW from Chicago.
I'm just here on behalf of my construction members and to let the legislators know that my construction members want things, the same things that every worker wants. We want good wages, we want good pensions, and we want good health care. But even more so for construction workers, we want a safe place to work. And because of the cyclical nature of our trades, we want some unemployment compensation when we're out of work. And now because of action and inaction by the current legislature, we don't have such a safe place to work, as safe a place to work as we did previously. And now it's a little more painful to be unemployed in Illinois today than it was previously.
Tony, a carpenter from Peoria, had this to say about the Solidarity Rally.
We're out here to support legislation to promote better living conditions and better wages for union members.
All right, and is there specific legislation that you're concerned about?
Protection of the Prevailing Wage Act, Restore the Scaffolding Act.
Okay, now what, for our listeners who might not be familiar with what the Scaffolding Act means, what does that, what does that mean to union members?
Basically be taking the cap off of what a person's value is.
The Scaffolding Act, formerly known as the Structural Work Act, required strict standards for the construction, maintenance of scaffolding on work sites, and held owners and contractors civilly and criminally liable for violations of the standards. It was repealed in 1995. Labor unions and their Democratic allies in the legislature have worked for its reinstatement. The Restored Scaffolding Act of 2001 passed in the Democratic House, but is stalled in the Republican Senate. Christine Boardman, president of Illinois SEIU, talked about the human costs of projected cuts in public services.
Public employees in general know that we have an obligation to provide public services, and we want to meet that goal. But we don't want to have that have a human cost, because when you talk about cutting employees here, quite frankly, many state services right now are operating at shortages. Vacancies are not being filled. And you see the consequences in every single aspect of the public services that we provide. So we're here today because we want to let the legislators know that we're going to be watching very carefully as to what position do they take on issues on the federal decoupling. What position do they take on issues such as an extra casino tax, cigarette tax, or different types of, or closing the different loopholes on the corporations that, quite frankly, have been getting a pass all along, and instead working people have paid the price.
Alice Rozier, a daycare worker from East St. Louis, an SEIU member, echoed Boardman's sentiments.
We're lobbying for more money and insurance.
Frank Cavaretta, speaking for the United Steelworkers of America.
While we were here, we wanted to take the opportunity to emphasize the very severe crisis that the members of the steelworkers are facing in Illinois, as well as nationwide. In the past 4 years, there have been 33 steel companies in the United States go into bankruptcy due to unfair, illegal trade practices that have occurred in the United States. Case in point, gassing up my car last weekend, Freeburg, Illinois, had a Granite City Steel shirt, Division of National Steel on. We represent those workers in that plant. Somebody tapped me on the shoulder, said, "Work at Granite City Steel?" I said, "No, I'm a union rep there. Don't work there, but we represent the workers." That man told me that he put his kids through college working at Granite City Steel. But you know something? He wasn't a steel worker. IBEW 309. Worked for contractors at that steel mill. When Granite City Steel filed for bankruptcy, teachers got laid off, janitors got laid off, services are cut in communities. We got to stop that.
The United Steelworkers aren't just fighting to keep the jobs in the steel mills, but since the merger of the steelworkers and the rubber workers in the mid-90s, they're also fighting to keep the rubber and tire industries from flowing out of the country. Two USWA workers from the Gates Rubber Plant in Galesburg spoke to their hope that their congressperson and senator could help them keep their jobs from going overseas and describe the problems they've been having with overseas management. Why is this a locally owned plant, or is this part of a larger multinational?
It was bought out. It was a privately owned company that was sold to Tompkins International, which is an English company that buys different things and, you know, then basically ruins them. So, yeah, So we were told that we make profit, but just not enough to suit them. They told us that we made a profit just this last year enough to give us an extra raise, an incentive raise because of it, but they told us they're going to move it out, so most of it anyway.
And they said where they're planning, are they planning on moving the production somewhere else?
Probably a half, a fourth to a half or better is at least going straight to Mexico. And they're making $1.89 an hour, so that's what they're telling us anyway. So whether they're actually getting that much, we don't know. But that's what they're telling. They're paying $1.89. So with our 13 something an hour, it's hard to compete. They built a plant in India. They've got one in Mexico, so it's kind of hard to compete with all this. But we do our best. It's apparently not good enough to suit them. Our problem is our corporation sees numbers instead of faces. If we get corporations to see faces, it'd be a different world, but we can't.
Outside, Javier, a member of the United Food and Commercial Workers from Chicago, talked about solidarity in the face of the current crisis. And what brings you here today?
The Solidarity Day, just to show our strength in numbers.
Okay. And what especially concerns the United Food Commercial Workers in Chicago? Like, what issues are motivating your members right now?
Well, actually, there's a couple. One of them is the Walmart coming in, trying to get huge tax incentives to take away good-paying union jobs. That's a primary concern that we have.
Right.
General issues. You know, when we get some legislation that affects any of these groups, it's going to affect us as well, and we need to show the support for any of the issues that are going on for working families in general.
The Urbana-Champaign Independent Media Center is always eager for volunteers to help in all facets of our work, from grant writing to construction to field recording, staffing our space in downtown Urbana. If you're interested in building up grassroots media in your hometown, the phone number at the IMC is 344-8820, or our website can be found at urbanaindymedia.org. That's urbana.indymedia.org. That does it for the IMC Radio News for 29th of April, 2002. Forgot the day there for a moment. Thanks to Dan Chambers and Avram Golden Trist. I'm your host, Michael Feltus. Thanks for listening. Stay tuned for the Friday Forum slot featuring a lecture from the Voices of Public Intellectuals series, followed at 7 p.m. by Champaign-Urbana Radio Theater, Jazz on Mellifluous Cacophony at 8 p.m., the WEF sessions featuring the Red Hot Valentines at 10 p.m., and Radio Star at 11 p.m. You're listening to WEFT Champaign, 90.1 FM, and it is 5:57.